The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Greetings, everyone. Germany's coalition government collapsed on November the 5th. On that same day, Mr. Trump won the presidential election. It is interesting that those events happened on the same day. Is it coincidence, or is there a lot more to it? This collapse shocked Germany and Europe. And if everybody really understood Bible prophecy, it would be shocking them as well. It is that dramatic and something that is crucial to a lot of events that are unfolding before our eyes. It is bad news, but it's leading us into the greatest news you could ever even imagine. It's that outstanding. Now, the Germans are just desperately trying to find a strong leader. They've had a weak leader for a long time, and all of the people are just clamoring for a strong leader. And that is going to cause them to allow their leaders to choose a strong man.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and we're coming to you from our beautiful campus here in Edstone, England. That was a Key of David show that we just opened with, almost exactly a year old, on Germany. And I wanted to revisit it because Germany is back to coalition chaos. And I've got a number of clips from various different Key of David shows from over the last 12 months. And putting these together, I think, is a really compelling warning about what is happening right now in Germany. I mean, coalition chaos is kind of everywhere in Europe right now. France has, they tried to pass the taxing part of their budget earlier this week. It was defeated 404 votes to one. So not a resounding success here. We've got a budget going on right now here in the UK where the government is unveiling their taxing and spending plans. I saw someone quip that actually Britain and France are kind of engaged in a game of 4D chess right now where they both know that the IMF doesn't have enough money to bail both of them out, so they're competing to go bankrupt first. Yeah, only barely a joke there as both countries are just in pretty dire financial straits. Now, Germany's not bankrupt, but we're getting some of the first signs of very significant problems for their coalition. And the type of things that can even lead to coalition collapse within Germany. And signs that the German elite and German industry are getting fed up with this government. And Mr. Flurry, in that Key of David last year, he focused on the election that was called, or at least the government felt, the same time that Donald Trump was voted in the United States. And he talked in that Key of David about how people knew, well, that election's not going to solve anything. And that Germany would need to get a strong leader in an undemocratic way. And we're still seeing that. And German Chancellor, not Angela Merkel anymore, but Friedrich Merz, and he's had several months in office now, and I think people at first wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. He talked a good game. Is he going to turn around Germany? And he's done some significant things that I want to talk about in just a second. But now he's kind of, his grace period is over. And people are starting to write him off as a failure and say, well, you know, this is all going to fall apart. He's not changing Germany. We're back to an unpopular, even chaotic coalition. Now, like I said, Merz has done some important things in office, and I think we do absolutely need to keep those in mind. And Mr. Stephen Flurry has kept up to date on this show about some of those massive developments in Germany. I think you mentioned this article a week or so ago from the Telegraph. Germany is arming itself to the teeth to transform Europe again. And it sounds like a Trumpet article, a Trumpet headline. The article says, in the face of Russian aggression, the German war machine is now rising once again and showing it as a force to be reckoned with. And who told you that would happen? Deutsche Welle, they had an article on the 70th anniversary of the Bundeswehr. This isn't in my notes, but the 70th anniversary in the German army. And they basically began that article by saying, well, who could have predicted in 1945 that in just 10 years you'd have a German army being set up again? And, you know, I immediately thought, well, Herbert W. Armstrong did. 1945, even the very day that war was ended and victory in Europe was declared, and he was saying, well, Germany's going to come back and they're going to do it as part of a European Union. And that's exactly where we are now. But this article goes on to talk, it says, under the radical reforms being pushed through by Friedrich Merz, the Chancellor, Berlin has this year thrown off all fiscal constraints on defense expenditure to build Europe's most powerful army. The overhaul has paved the way for massive equipment purchases of tanks, artillery, fighter planes, warships, costing hundreds of billions of pounds as the Bundeswehr prepares to face up to the threat posed by Vladimir Putin. And it talks about the huge turnaround there happening. It talks about how much of this is coming from German companies, that Germany used to buy American, and they're not anymore. It talks about Rheinmetall, whose shares before the Ukrainian war were 96 euros a share, and it's now 1,700 euros a share. Now, this bit, though, this is not like the trumpet. They say, for some, the rapid military buildup will evoke the fearsome war machine once built by the Nazis. But today's rearmament is far removed from the 1930s. A support for higher military spending, now at more than 60%, according to the polls, has been hard won from a skeptical public. You know, while Germany was quite, I mean, 1920s Germany was very different from 1930s and 1940s Germany. You know, there was, they had their pretty hedonistic, decadent time there. And they still became a war machine then, but that's the message of the Telegraph. Germany's becoming a massive war machine. It's transforming Europe, but don't worry about it. You know, we've seen where that's led every time before. But you can be sure it's not going to go there this time, says the Telegraph. But really a remarkable turnaround they're highlighting. Then this is from Politico, also a week or two ago. Germany's rearmament upends Europe's power balance. So they're seeing it too. And they begin, for decades, the European Union ran on an unspoken understanding. Germany handled the money, France handled the military. Now the tables are turning. You know, it used to be that France spent a bit more than Germany on its military, and so France was the military leader. And after World War II, and with that in people's memories, you know, Germany was quite happy to step back and let France take the lead on anything military. Well, now that's gone. Germany is not afraid to step forward, and not only that, but France isn't the number one spender anymore. They quote Christian Schmidt, an MP in the Bundestag, saying, everywhere I go in the world, from the Baltic to Asia, people are asking Germany to take on more responsibility. The expectation is that Germany will finally step up and match its economic weight with defense power. And while this article talks about by 2019, Germany is expecting to be spending 153 billion euros on its defense, while France is planning to spend just 80 billion. So this isn't Germany now outspending France by just a little bit, the way that France was outspending Germany by just a little bit. You know, they're going to double what France is spending. I mean, even this year, they're going to become quite close to that. Double. And that completely changes the dynamic. I mean, Germany already leads Europe, but how much more dramatic and how much more militaristic is that leadership going to be when Germany is spending twice what France is spending? Politico writes, one EU official called the shift in Germany's military potential telluric, which I guess is a fancy way of saying earth-shaking. Another diplomatic, well, they said, it is the most important thing happening right now at EU level. Yeah, this is very important. And they go on to talk about all of these 320 new weapons programs with hundreds of billions of euros spent there. And again, less than 10% of new contracts going to US suppliers. They're building up their own. They have a subhead. France feels uneasy. Yeah, France is a bit uneasy at what's going on. They did have, this is France's consolation. They're like, well, if Germany wanted to take us over at this stage, they could just buy us anyway. So we don't really need to worry about being invaded. That's what they're looking at it. Poland is torn as well. You know, this article quotes Poland's deputy defense minister, who says, looking at history, a situation where Germany would link its economic power with military might has always raised fears. You know, they've got some fears, but they also fear Russia. And so this article kind of deals with this contrasting fears. Who are they going to look to defend them, Germany or Russia? And actually, Poland, at least for now, has decided, well, we'd rather a strong Germany that might be able to protect us from Russia. Though they are, he said, this deputy defense minister, he says, I am more worried about trade ties between Germany and Russia, still quite vivacious, and the growing presence in Berlin to return to business as normal after the war of Ukraine. So that's what keeps Poland up at night, fears that you'll have Russia and Germany get together and do a deal again. You know, a deal that no doubt is or very likely has already been done. And then the article finishes quoting a diplomat, it could be frightening, no doubt. It could be frightening what's happening in Europe. They're not frightened anywhere near enough. And this is a story from last week as well that Mr. Flurry touched on the show, where Donald Trump's ambassador to NATO, Matthew Whitaker, he's pushing for Germany to take over NATO, take over leadership of NATO. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a recording. I did have another look today, but he said at the Berlin Security Conference last week, I look forward to the day when Germany comes to the United States and says that we're ready to take over the Supreme Allied Command position. I think we're a long way from that, but I look forward to those discussions. And people there talked about that the German general sitting on the stage with them looked astonished at that statement. What he even said that it left him a little bit astonished. And this is a dramatic statement. I mean, the supreme commander in Europe of NATO, they're going to control the deployment of hundreds of thousands of troops. They're going to have the ability to launch nuclear strikes potentially. And because it's always been American troops and American nuclear weapons and the American Navy, the American Air Force that would form the backbone of that, it has always been an American that's been the supreme Allied commander, starting with General Eisenhower. But now America's kind of saying, yeah, we're done. And actually, we think Germany, not Britain. Britain has often held the deputy position within NATO. And for a long time, since World War II, Britain has spent a lot more on its military than Germany has. Well, that's over. And America is saying, well, we're going to hand the baton over to Germany. And they do talk about how, well, yeah, Germany needs to build up its military even further to make that happen. But that's what America is encouraging them to do. So those have been the dramatic turnarounds that we have had in the last year or so. Well, actually, just before I get to that, I've got another clip to play from A Key of David, where Mr. Flurry was talking about another way that America is pushing Germany to lead NATO, where they're encouraging Germany to set up military bases overseas. They're setting up one in Lithuania. That's what this Key of David was about. But here's what Mr. Flurry had to say about this push.
And President Trump keeps pushing them to make Germany as powerful as they can be. As if he didn't know anything about Germany's history. Well, there's just recent history here. But after all, it's only 80 years since the end of World War II. That's rather recent history. And notice what we wrote here. NATO is establishing German dominance over Europe. That's quite the turnaround for an alliance set up in the famous words of the first Secretary General to, quote, keep the Russians out, the Americans in, and the Germans down. These men then knew that Germany had to be kept down or we'd have another war, world war, which is exactly where we're headed, and Germany is going to start it. Your Bible tells you that, and we've been telling you that for many, many years. I mean, well over 50 years.
So this is a big, important change that is going on. But the main thing I wanted to focus on today on the show, though, is that this newly rearmed Germany is in major danger of being transformed overnight, of having a strong man come on the scene very, very quickly. And several stories are coming out now showing that this coalition is struggling to get anything else done. You know, they're rapidly remilitarizing because, as we read from one of those news articles, 60% of Germans are on board with that. That's overwhelmingly popular. That's like the one thing this coalition government can do. But on everything else, they're stuck. So, for example, they're buying a ton more weapons, but you also need more men. So right now you have about 180,000 in the German military. They want to increase that to 260,000 over the next decade. They want to go from 100,000 reservists to 200,000. Okay, but how? Well, that's led to this big argument about conscription and whether they reintroduce it, how they reintroduce it, how they get more people to step forward and serve in the military. So they had a plan to send out a mandatory questionnaire to all 18-year-olds, along with a health checkup, and use that to make a list of people that are best suited for the military and where they live so that they can contact them in an emergency, but also to target those people and encourage them to sign up for the military. But what if you don't get enough people signing up voluntarily? That's the sticking point. And so they put this forward, and then there was some coalition wrangling, and then they ended up putting in a bit in this bill that would say they'd have a lottery to conscript people at random if they didn't meet their minimum quota voluntarily. But they didn't talk to the German defense minister himself, Boris Pistorius, about this. And so he ended up persuading people to vote against his own law. It was a bit of a fiasco. They got it through in the end by kind of taking the lottery out or paving the way for a lottery vote at a later date. But it ended up being a big mess. It was a crisis. It blew over. They were able to hammer out a compromise. It did create a whole bunch of bad blood. But it was one kind of temporary crisis that you had for them. And now we're on to the next crisis. This time it's about pensions. I mean, this is what has brought down something like seven French governments over the last couple of years. And Germany have their pension issues. So the Social Democrats want to raise pensions, or they want to fix it so that pensions are always 48% of average earnings. And as average earnings go up, pensions go up. Trouble is, you have more and more people retiring and fewer people entering the workforce. And this is a massive long-term trend. You go up to the 1950s, you had six workers for every pensioner. Now you have two workers for every pensioner. And what government should do, what they said they'd do, is you know, that I pay my Social Security or national insurance it is over here, and the government put that in a pot, and then they give me my money back with interest and investment when I retire. That's how it should have been done. It's not how it was done, and instead, current pensioners, the government takes money from people that are currently working and gives them to people who are currently retired. When you have fewer and fewer workers and more and more retirees, the government is taking more and more money from those who are working and handing it to those that are retired. If you link pensions to average earnings, and that balance is always shifting, it means that you're promising every year to take more and more out of the pockets of those that are working to give money to retirees. The pension burden is guaranteed then, set in stone, to keep rising. And so the Social Democrats, though, there's a lot of pensioners, so that shifts the kind of the voting patterns. They want to guarantee that they keep going up. And because they're in coalition, the Christian Democratic Union as a whole went along with that. And they get different bits that they want in there, and that's kind of coalition politics. But now you've got 18 members of the CDU, this is Merz's own party, who are just saying, no, we don't care what our party has agreed. No, we're not going with this. They're all under 35. They're pointing out the long-term costs of this. The guy that's leading it, he said under 2040, we're talking about 120 billion euros in additional costs, which have to be burdened by my generation. We believe this is fiscally unsustainable. And they are holding up the whole thing. And basically, it's stalled. They're still working on it. They're still arguing about it. They haven't put it to a vote because they know that that vote will be defeated. But this issue, this isn't a pensions issue. This is 18 members in a parliament of 630 people, and yet they're able to stop the whole thing. Now, it's pensions this time. What is it going to be next? This government, this Social Democrats, Christian Union government, they have a majority of 12. And this is, Angela Merkel had unstable left-right coalitions, but at least those coalitions had massive majorities, two-thirds often majority. Now they've been so weakened. I mean, this is the equivalent of Germany's Republicans and Democrats, and they've both shrunk in popularity so much that a coalition between the Republicans and Democrats in Germany only has a majority of 12. And so it means that just a handful of members on the fringes of either party can stop everything. And so, yes, there's a strong majority in Germany for rearming, and they are doing that. They've already done so much on that front. But for anything else, this coalition could do almost nothing. You know, Eurointelligence, they've been talking for several weeks about how this is how coalitions end. And they're not saying, well, this coalition is definitely going to fall apart over this. But he says this is the kind of headlines, the kind of stories that lead to the end of coalitions. They said, we're not surprised that this coalition is acting the way it is. We had three grand coalitions under Merkel, during which the country laid the foundations of its current economic decline. Why would grand coalition number four be any different? The only difference is the chancellor. But it's become clear now that despite his aggressive pro-reform rhetoric during the election campaign, Merz's priority is to keep the coalition together. Pension reform, he concluded, is the price to pay. What is also becoming evident is a lack of leadership quality, poor negotiation skills, and a tendency towards flippancy. And he'll quite often offend people with just kind of needed, unnecessary off-the-cuff remarks. So he talked a tough game, though. He talked good about reform, and we're going to save the German economy, and we're going to make good reforms. And I think that gave him quite a lot of goodwill for about 6 months. And now it's becoming very clear. Okay, you talk a good talk. What are the fruits? And it's very clear to a lot of people, the fruits aren't there. And Eurointelligence basically says, we've given up. They say there is absolutely no way that this coalition is going to pass any reforms with the potential to raise productive growth. The only yardstick is that matters. They say, we're not ruling out that a future German government might pass reforms, but we can rule out that it will happen under this coalition. We can also rule out that it will happen under Merz, no matter what coalition he leads. And they had an earlier article, and they talked about the first 6 months of the German government. They say in those 6 months, Merz lost all credibility as a reformer. His stated ambitions were more radical than any German chancellor ever proposed. So he came in with this radical program, and apart from the military, he's done pretty much nothing. Just this morning, Merz gave a speech in the Bundestag. They're debating the budget right now in the German parliament, and he talked about the need for patience, to take time. And that's not the message people want to hear. They want these reforms now. And it's not just, well, voters are running out of patience. There are big problems in Germany. The coalition can't really do anything about it. But it's not just voters. And in fact, they're not really the most important people that are running out of patience. Consider this clip from the Key of David that Mr. Gerald Flurry gave a couple of months ago.
Who is leading Germany? Many people don't know. Most people don't. And if they did know, they would often be very frightened about how that government is run, and especially in this end time, more so than even in the past. But notice this. I want to give you this quote. Donald Tusk, a former president of the European Council and former prime minister of Poland, said he had a private conversation with Merkel about the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Tusk called Merkel's public support of the pipeline her biggest mistake. But the most revealing thing he said was that she privately admitted to him that she was helpless to do otherwise because of pressure from German businesses. How about that? The German businesses have a lot of power, and we're going to go on to see here that they even overruled the Chancellor of Germany. This group of corporations, they have a lot of power.
There's a couple of clips stitched together, actually. But he's pointing out there that German businesses have a whole lot of power in Germany. And even Angela Merkel, she said, well, I had no choice but to approve these Nord Stream pipelines with Russia because the businesses made me. They wanted these pipelines that gives them cheap fuel, but it also politically unites Germany with Russia. you know, create. In Poland, they call these pipelines the Molotov-Ribbentrop II pipeline. You know, this is the deal that Hitler made with Stalin. And they say, well, these pipelines, they're a new Hitler-Stalin pact. And yeah, they're right. And it was German business leaders that pushed Angela Merkel into doing that. And she said, well, I couldn't stop them. They're a massive power in Germany. And Mr. Flurry, in this Key of David, he went back to the way that the Nazis got together with German business leaders in 1944, when they knew the war was over and they planned things out for their business leaders to revive Germany, to bring Germany back. And then here's another clip from that Key of David.
In all of Germany, they have a disdain for democracy. They don't want democracy, especially those leaders that keep rising and sometimes even overthrow the chancellor. That's how powerful they are, because they all get their corporation powers together. And do they ever have a big clout?
You get these corporations together and they can get rid of the chancellor. And they have been making very clear over the last 2 or 3 months to Friedrich Merz that they're not happy with what he has been doing and his lack of progress, his lack of reform. And German industry is really struggling right now. VW, Volkswagen, for example, they're Germany's largest company. And of course, they trace their roots back to Adolf Hitler. He got them started, but they reported a $1.25 billion loss in the third quarter this year. They said they were losing 5 billion euros a year due to Donald Trump's new tariffs. China is making electric vehicles much more cheaply than European companies can. They're really eating Europe's lunch on the electric vehicle front. This is the first loss that VW have had since COVID. You've also had the Ukrainian war shooting raw material prices through the roof. I mean, this used to be how Germany made money, is they had these sweet deals with Russia where they got cheap fuel, cheap raw materials, and they're very good at manufacturing things not as cheaply as China, but to a much higher quality, and then exporting them around the world. And they were able to compete because of those cheap raw materials. And now it's not working, and German business leaders are demanding change. And they are telling Merz that it's not good enough. On September 22nd, that was just a few days after Mr. Flurry's Key of David aired, Merz invited the bosses of the kind of the major umbrella organizations for some of these big businesses to a secret meeting. We don't know what was discussed there, but some of that leaked out to Bild. And Bild wrote, at the secret summit, the heads of the four major business associations gave the chancellor a thorough grilling for an hour and a half. And they said the key demand made of Friedrich Merz was to pick up the pace on social reforms, reducing bureaucracy and modernizing the state. You know, they're telling him you need to move more quickly. Today, this morning, Merz was saying, I need more patience, more time. I mean, the German leaders told him 2 months ago, you're out of time. We need some fruits. We need some results here. A fortnight ago, the German Council of Economic Experts, they gave their assessment, and it's not good for Merz. They said, Germany's economy, they're not really going to recover in 2026. We've got more low growth. Debts are going to be rising. Exports falling. Euro Intelligence wrote about this German Council of Economic Experts report saying, we see the report as a vote of no confidence in the government by a nonpartisan panel. If these policies were to continue for a whole legislative term, the situation will become quite dramatic. We read that the country's 32 business associations, so again, remember how powerful that what Mr. Flurry said about those German business leaders, we read that the country's 32 business associations have written a letter to the Bundestag group leaders to warn them that the pension reform coalition is planning would cost the companies €500 billion in extra costs until 2050. As we currently see in France, it is politically very hard to roll back pension entitlements. As the saying goes, the unsustainable ends one way or the other. There is no path to recovery without reforms. The current path is not one Germany's political classes will be able to walk for very long. The business leaders, the business community is not happy. This morning, the big news out of Germany is Der Familienunternehmer, family entrepreneurs is what that translates to. It's a business association for small businesses. There's, I think, 6,000 or so small businesses that are part of this association. They're starting to have talks with the AfD, the Alternative for Deutschland. the far-right fringe group in Germany, and no other business grouping has done this yet, at least formally and openly, and sat down and had talks with the AfD. And they're getting a lot of flack for that. But is this a shot across the bows for Merz? You know, we have more options, Germany's business leaders are saying. I mean, this family entrepreneurs group, they're not the big spokesman for big businesses. They're not the biggest by any means. But is there a warning shot in this? And are they kind of blazing a trail, potentially breaking the taboo, getting all the flack so that a bigger business group or a group representing big business can start talking to the AfD later without it raising quite so much attention? You know, they're saying we have options. If things don't change, we can start talking to the AfD more seriously and maybe help them into power. After all, it was German businesses that helped the Nazis rise to power. Mr. Flurry talked about that a few years ago when he was talking in the direct aftermath of Angela Merkel's comments. And some in the Alternative for Deutschland are very extreme. Some aren't, but some are basically neo-Nazi there. Some of them, you get AfD leaders talking about all the wonderful things their soldiers did in World War I and World War II. They make no secret that they want Germany to behave the same way. Building up a big military? Well, look back to how our soldiers acted in World War II and World War I, and that's what we want our major military. That's how we want to use our military today. So we're back to an unstable coalition that the industrialists don't like. But that's also not more. And the industrialists, let's say they get rid of Merz. That's not going to solve their problem either. In a lot of ways, it's not his fault. You still have a coalition with a majority of 12 where it just takes a small group of MPs, you know, anybody and just a few friends basically, can then stop the government from accomplishing anything. So just throwing Merz out the window is not going to fix things. Okay, well, what about new elections? Would they be able to force new elections? Well, that's not going to solve anything either. You'd have a parliament looking pretty much the same, if not with an even more unstable coalition, because the Alternative for Deutschland has risen a bit more in popularity since the last elections. And they did that just a few months ago. We're not that far out of the few elections, and that didn't really solve the leadership crisis. So if you want reforms, it's not really just about changing Merz or changing the coalition. You've got to get rid of elections and coalition politics, and maybe have a strong guy take power. You know, maybe just temporarily, as a temporary measure, at least initially. And then very soon, people find out, well, it's not temporary. So you can very easily see a strong man coming to power due to all of this frustration. And this is something Mr. Flurry has talked about again and again, that a strong man may take power due to a weak coalition. And here's a compilation of just some of the times when he's talked about this.
Now, he's not going to come in by, let's say, a democratic process. He's going to come in and use flatteries and sort of tweak the democratic process, it says here, something like that, and perhaps take advantage of a weak coalition. But he's going to come in by flatteries. So God sees him, well, not the same way the people see him, but he actually gains that power, hijacks that European superpower by flatteries. He apparently puts together some kind of a small coalition, and that's how he moves into power. I mean, he is unusually adept at flattery. You have to be very intelligent to be able to deceive people in high places with flattery. And he does it magnificently. Well, he was never voted into the office, but he came in, got control of all that power through deceit and flatteries. Now remember, this is an end time book, and this is an end time prophecy. It's going to happen again in this end time. A man is going to come, and through deceit and flatteries is going to get control of the Holy Roman Empire and its 10 toes or 10 kings, and not by voting. Even though that is their system today, it is not he's going to come in another way.
He's warned about this for a long time. And now we have a Germany that has rearmed. I mean, how was it? Let me find what the Telegraph headline was. There we go. Germany's arming itself to the teeth to transform Europe again. So now we've got a Germany that is already arming itself to the teeth. Well, is this the next step now? That we swap in now that that's done, and now that there's a strong majority in Germany behind arming itself to the teeth, is now the time to bring in the strong man? Let's get into the Bible just quickly to look at why Mr. Flurry has made this forecast. And Daniel chapter 11, this says, based on a prophecy here in Daniel 11, and there are so many prophecies about the Holy Roman Empire in Europe, this church-state combine led by Assyria, which is modern Germany, and Bible prophecy. And there's a strong man at the top, and Daniel 11 tells us how that he gets there. Daniel 11 and verse 21, it says, "And in his estate shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries." And this describes how ancient Antiochus took power. He didn't gain it the honorable way, the normal way. He gained power through flatteries, and that Antiochus went on to set up the abomination of desolation, an idol in the temple of Jerusalem. And then Jesus Christ in Matthew 24, he warns people to look for another abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet in the future. And Jesus Christ himself says, watch out for another guy like this. What Daniel was talking about, well, it's not really about the ancient Antiochus Epiphanes. He was a type, a forerunner, but it's about a coming strong leader. That's the main one you need to watch out for. And Daniel emphasizes this is an end time book. And so there's going to be another guy, another strong man who's going to come into power, and they won't give him the honor of the kingdom. He doesn't come into the power the usual route of holding an election. And instead, he's going to come in by flatteries. And so there'll be some kind of maneuverings, coalition negotiations, German business leaders working behind the scenes, something like that to bring this individual to power. And maybe Merz will have a role in that. And Merz might still have a role in this coming beast power. Like I said, he has really played a key role in transforming Germany's military. But Friedrich Merz, as the elected chancellor, leader of a coalition with a majority of 12, that kind of a leader is not going to make the changes that Germany wants to be made now. And so watch for this strongman. And what does this mean for you? Well, I wanted to play another quote from the clip, or a couple of clips from the Key of David, Germany's coalition government collapsed, from Mr. Flurry from about a year ago, on where this is leading.
Notice what it says in verse 23, "And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full," I mean, it's really a time of great transgressors, a great problem in this end of the end time. "A king of fierce countenance, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up." Well, what does that mean? Fierce countenance, dark sentences, it knows. It has these qualities, and this man is going to hijack the European Union, which will then be developed in the Holy Roman Empire, and those 10 kings that is discussed in Revelation 13 and Revelation 17. So it's going to be the Holy Roman Empire that we have been prophesying about for over 75 years. Verse 24, "And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power." Well, whose power does he have? Well, Satan the devil's. "And his power shall be mighty, and not by his own power, and he shall destroy mightily," it should read, "and shall prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people." Here is something that Lang's commentary says, "He destroys by peace, with suddenness, by a malignant purpose."
He comes suddenly. In other words, he attacks countries that are his friends, are his lovers. That's the kind of man it is. And he is a man led by Satan, the devil. That's what it's all about.
So right now, America's saying, here, Germany, take over NATO. Run this for us, will you? We're fed up of paying. And so we're going to encourage you to build up your own massive military force. You know, keep going. Make it even bigger. Raise your ambitions. Make a bigger military. Because we want you to take our place as leader of NATO. Keep building that up. And then suddenly Germany rejects democracy. You have a strong leader. Before America even realizes what's happened, they've turned against America. This is why we need to watch what is happening in Germany. If the nation doesn't repent, and yesterday's show was just such an eye-opening look at evil in America, demonism in America. It's amazing how far that has spread. And so the nation doesn't repent, and you know, it doesn't look like President Trump is leading the nation to repent, and there's not fruits of repentance, really. Well, then God is rising up Germany to correct them. And that's the power rising up right now in Europe. But there's another power in Europe that we have to be watching too that is also rising. If we look over at Revelation chapter 17, you know, talking about the same power that the strong man in Daniel 8 is going to lead, and it begins, and there came one of the seven angels, which had the seven vials, and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto you the judgment of the great whore that sits upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, and having seven heads and 10 horns. And it's not rocket science to figure out what this is talking about. A beast, well, that symbolizes empire and Bible prophecy. That's there in Revelation. That's there in the book of Daniel. And here's a woman, a church in biblical symbolism. And she's leading and guiding this beast. She's riding the beast. And you can see in verse 10, it talks about there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is. So this is an empire. It's led by a series of kings. It rises and falls and it's resurrected. And it's led by a great false church. And that's not hard to find in human history. That's referring to the Holy Roman Empire in Europe, rising and falling, being led by the Catholic Church. And that's what this strong man is going to head up, and that's what he's going to be in charge of. But it's also going to be led by a church. The beast will be ridden by this woman. And so this church is also rising up. And Mr. Armstrong talked about how that Germany and France and all these other European countries, you know, they try to come together, they try to form their political union and their military union and get together so that they can be more powerful, so that they can stand up against Russia and China and the United States, and they can have this united military. But he said they're not going to be able to do it without the Catholic Church. They may try, and they were trying. I mean, they've been trying for decades. And he said, well, why haven't we had this? Why haven't they been able to really come together as the type of close-knit superstate that the Bible talks about? And he said, well, they need the church. That's the only way the Bible says it's going to happen. They're going to need the Catholic Church to help bring them together the way that the Catholic Church has led the Holy Roman Empire. It's going to take a woman to guide that beast. And so we've seen this week the Pope issue this call to unity. He published a document, an encyclical titled On the Unity of the Faith. And here we see the Catholic Church moving towards fulfilling its critical prophesied role. And tomorrow the Pope is off on his first foreign trip. He's visiting Turkey and Lebanon. And these are going to be important members of Germany's Middle East alliance. It's very significant that he's going there. Mr. Flory drew quite a lot of attention to, I think it was Pope Francis's visit to Lebanon. And so he'll be off on this trip. And also during this trip and visiting these countries, he'll be celebrating the 1700th anniversary of the Council of Nicaea. And that's what his document is all about, on the unity of the faith. And Mr. Armstrong writes about this council, just to give some background in Mystery of the Ages. And what he talks about, Polycrates waging a hotter controversy over the same Passover Easter question with another bishop of Rome. This theological battle was called the Quadragesimal Controversy. Polycarp contended, as Jesus and the original apostles taught, that the Passover should be observed in the new Christian form introduced by Jesus and by the apostle Paul, using unleavened bread and wine instead of sacrificing a lamb, on the eve of the 14th of Nisan, the first month in the sacred calendar, occurring in the spring. But the Roman Church insisted that it be observed on a Sunday. About the same time, another controversy was raging between Dr. Arius of Alexandria, a Christian leader who died in AD 336, and other bishops over calling God a Trinity. Dr. Arius stoutly opposed the Trinity doctrine, but introduced errors of his own. In AD 325, the Emperor Constantine called the Nicene Council to settle these controversies. Constantine was not then yet a Christian, but a political ruler. But as political ruler, he assumed control. The council approved both the Easter Sunday doctrine and the Trinity. Constantine, then civil ruler, made it law, but he was not able to make it truth. Satan has deceived the entire world in regard to the very nature of who and what God is, as well as of Christ and the Holy Spirit. And Nicaea, it really is a point of unity for Protestants, for Catholics, for Orthodox. They all go back to that council. And they just about all believe this false doctrine of the Trinity that was foisted on the world by a political leader, by a Roman emperor. Now, it was a council of bishops, and they came to their conclusion, and then this Roman emperor forced everyone to accept it. And that's not really the picture you get of the Council of Nicaea, though, from the Pope's letter. And Mr. Flurry mentioned it's a very scholarly letter. It doesn't speak in plain terms like that. But it's just, it talks all about Christ. Pretty much the only thing it focuses on from the Council of Nicaea is kind of debate over the nature of Christ, and is Christ less than God? Is Christ God? A very kind of scholarly argument. But he holds up Nicaea as a model of how we solve disputes. And it all, I mean, again, it all sounds very nice, and it talks a lot about Christ. Very focused on Christ. So, yeah, a lot of that sounds good. But Revelation 13 and verse 8, talking about this same church in the form of a religious beast, because it really is a religious empire. It says, it describes this beast, and it said, I beheld another beast coming out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. You know, it looks appealing, but if you actually pay close attention to what is being said and the meaning behind those words, it speaks like a dragon. Now, in this encyclical, the Pope, he said, in order to carry out this ministry credibly, we must walk together to reach unity and reconciliation among all Christians. That sounds pretty nice. The Nicene Creed can be the basis and reference point for this journey. It offers us a model of true unity and legitimate diversity. So the Council of Nicaea, it's a model. This is a model of how to have unity, he says. So let's take him at his word. What does that really mean? That the Council of Nicaea is a model to have unity. Is he saying the Roman Catholic Church, the Protestant Church, the Orthodox churches, do they need a new Constantine, a new Roman emperor to force his way or to force the Catholic way on all people, on all Christians, punishing those, killing those like Constantine did that disagree, or exiling them? You know, if Nicaea is a model, and it was presided over an emperor, and it brought unity because that emperor was there to use the sword of the state to enforce that council's decisions, well, isn't the Pope saying we need an emperor today? And that's why it's worth bringing this up, I think, in context of even what's happening in Germany and the need for a strong leader. I mean, the German industrialists and even a lot of the German population, they see the need for a strong leader. The Pope sees the need for a strong secular leader. You know, if we have a strong leader, we can bring everybody back together. And yeah, Mr. Armstrong talked about that too. I've got some of the quotes later in my notes. we can, we'll do what we can to bring in these different groups. And then, but sooner or later, if these groups don't come to Rome, they'll use the sword. They'll get that emperor involved. In The True History of the True Church, Mr. Flurry writes, imagine a political ruler establishing law and doctrine in the church. There is no way such a satanic work could be done in God's true church. It was from this discussion that the doctrine of the Trinity, as many churches understand it today, was finally formalized 3 centuries after Jesus Christ's ministry. And then later in the book, Mr. Flurry writes, this was a turning point in the history of the world. I mean, the Pope sees this as a turning point in the history of the world too. Mr. Flurry says that it all began with Constantine and the Council of Nicaea. And then, you know, he points out what I've just mentioned. Constantine personally and actively championed the military occupation to eradicate Passover keepers, whether they were in God's true church or worldly churches. Now, if you didn't go along with Nicaea about the Trinity or about when to keep Passover, the emperor came after you. Constantine's goal was to force everyone to join the Catholic Church. And again, Pope Leo says, this is a model of unity. This is how we need to do unity. Many of those who refused to surrender to the doctrine and worship of the Catholic Church were slaughtered. He pointed back to Nicaea as a new age of persecution began, he said. False Christians killing true Christians. And if we look back at Revelation chapter 2, discussing the history of the true church at this time, it says, fear none of those things which you shall suffer. Behold, the devil shall cast some of you into prison, and you shall be tried and have tribulation 10 days. Be you faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. 10 days or 10 years, applying a day for a year principle. And Mr. Flurry talks about, well, this is the beginning of Nicaea, is the beginning of 10 years of persecution that God's church suffered. But the Pope didn't talk about any of that force. But if the Pope wants a new age of Nicaea, does he want a new age of persecuting Christians? It speaks like a dragon. That's really what he's saying. But this is another very... I mean, the Pope going, trying to make unity, even the way that he's going about it with referencing Nicaea, this is a massive fulfilled prophecy. And this is what the 1961 Plain Truth said. The Pope will step in as the supreme unifying authority, the only one that can finally unite the different nations of Europe. The iron jurisdiction over both schools and religion will be turned over to the Roman Catholic Church. Europe will go Roman Catholic. Protestantism will be absorbed into the Mother Church and totally abolished. So they're going to unify Europe and help set up an emperor, and then the emperor is going to make sure everyone comes back to the Catholic Church. I mean, I think the Catholic Church, you look at what they're working on Orthodox, and you know, they'll bring in a great many probably even before then. But those that, just like with Nicaea, say no, you can browbeat us, and some will be browbeaten, some will go along, but others will say no, we won't. And then they'll have the emperor and they say, well, fine, well, we'll kill you then. Mr. Armstrong, he wrote, this is also from The Plain Truth, says the final, albeit short-lived triumph of Catholicism is recorded in literal dozens of Bible prophecies. Right now, whether we want to believe it or not, the stage is being set for the greatest revolution in religion the world has ever witnessed. The mighty problem of achieving unity is twofold. First, it involves reconciliation of the Orthodox schism that officially commenced in 1054 and divided the churches of the East. And this is why the Pope's going to Turkey, to Constantinople, the headquarters of the Greek Orthodox Church. He's working to reconcile that schism. And then this article later said, second, it involves restoration to the Roman communion of all Protestantism, which developed from 1517 onwards. And so much of that has already happened. So we've got more fulfilled prophecy in the making with what the Catholic Church is doing right now. So the German strongman could be here very soon. And we're seeing the Catholic Church getting ready to play that unifying role. And this is Bible prophecy, again, being fulfilled before your eyes. And our book, The True History of the True Church, has a lot more to say about this. I mean, if you want to get into more how some of these false doctrines came about, the origins of the Catholic Church, the persecution of the true church, that book really does have it all. And then A Strong German Leader is Imminent. That is another pretty short book that we've got that goes through the different prophecies about this coming leader in Daniel 8 and talks about the man who could very well play that role. So both of those booklets you can get on our website, thetrumpet.com. We'd be very happy to send them to you. You can read them online, or we can send your own free copy, free of charge. Well, thank you for joining us, I guess, on this Thanksgiving Eve, you could say. I think Sam Livingston will be with you tomorrow, where I imagine he'll probably have a more Thanksgiving-based message to you. Not that I am not particularly grateful. I'm certainly very grateful to have this opportunity to speak to you about some of these urgent Bible prophecies, but please do tune into that show tomorrow. If you have any questions, any comments, please do get in touch with us with letters@thetrumpet.com. So please join us tomorrow, and until then, keep watching your world.